Our second case for argument this morning is Central States Pension Fund against Georgia Pacific. Asking GSA to do anything is usually to get worse.
No, you didn't do it.
Pardon?
Right.
Good.
This is an airport base station. It looks like a white flying saucer. It needs to be untucked and plugged in again.
Mr. Berliner.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brad Berliner, and I represent the appellants in this matter, the Central States Pension Fund, and Howard McDougall, one of Central States' trustees. Excuse me. With me this morning is my co-counsel, John Franzik. Your Honors, the Multi-Employer Pension Plan Amendments Act to ERISA was designed to ensure that employer contribution cessations did not have harm on pension plans. Thus, when an employer pulls out of a multi-employer pension plan, under most circumstances, including when an employer sells its assets, the employer is required to pay withdrawal liability. This particular case concerns a narrow statutory exception to that withdrawal liability requirement, namely 29 U.S.C. Section 1384. And under Section 1384, when an employer and an asset purchaser comply with the strict requirements set forth in Section 1384, and further provided that the employer's contribution cessation is solely because of that sale of assets, then the employer is exempt from paying withdrawal liability. The first issue I intend to address before this Court today is the arbitrator's error as a matter of law in ruling that Georgia Pacific's contribution cessation was solely because of its 2004 sale of assets. In fact, the arbitrator applied a facts and circumstances proximate cause analysis, whereas had she applied the solely because standard set forth in Section 1384, she would have determined that Georgia Pacific's 1994 through 97 facility closures and resulting contribution cessations also constituted causes of Georgia Pacific's permanent contribution cessation. The second issue I intend to address today is one that neither the arbitrator nor the district court reached, and that issue concerns the contribution history that was included in the withdrawal liability calculation. Pursuant to Sections 1384 and 1391, Central States included in the withdrawal liability calculation the 10 years of contribution history of Georgia Pacific and only excluded the contribution history for the years assumed by the purchaser of Georgia Pacific's assets. Central States asked this Court to reverse the rulings of the arbitrator and district court and uphold Central States' withdrawal liability assessment in its
entirety. Mr. Berliner, if I could stop you there just for a moment.
Sure.
In reading your briefs, I'm not clear exactly what you are asking for, especially given the fact that there was one payment made earlier for one of the closings. Are you giving them credit for that closing? Are you going back and asking for payments for all of the closings of that division prior to the asset sale? Are you just looking for those attributed to the asset sale? What are you asking for?
Let me try to answer it in a few different parts. With respect to the 1997 facility closures, Georgia Pacific incurred partial withdrawal liability.
Yes.
And they paid an amount with respect to that liability. As a result of paying that liability, they are entitled under Section 1386 to a credit for that partial withdrawal liability in determining future withdrawal liability. the credit that they earned with respect to having paid that partial withdrawal liability is carried forward and phased out over 10 years. Now, in determining Georgia Pacific's withdrawal liability in 2004, you look at the contribution history of Georgia Pacific for the years 1994 through 2003, and that includes contribution history attributable to the facilities Georgia closed in its pulp and paper division from 1994 through 1995. It includes contribution history attributable to the facilities Georgia closed in 1997 in its building products division. And it also includes the pre-5-year history related to the operations Georgia sold in the asset sale. But importantly, it excludes in the calculation any withdrawal liability withdrawal liability attributable to the operations that the asset purchaser assumed primary liability for. So when you look at an entity's complete withdrawal liability, it's determined based upon the entire company or control group's contribution history for a 10-year period. And that's pursuant to Section 1391. 1384 modifies 1391 to the extent it requires the asset purchaser to assume primary liability for a certain portion of the employer's contribution history. And so Central States asked this court to apply the de novo standard of review and correctly interpret the meaning of solely because.
In effect, are you saying that the arbitrator's most fundamental mistake was that she looked at Georgia Pacific's business transactions with too focused a lens, that she should have looked at a broader history, and if she had looked at the broader history, what she would have seen is one effort over a long period of time to restructure the corporation's business, divest itself of unprofitable entities, focus its business on essentials, and in fact it's out of that effort that the liability arises?
Not exactly, Your Honor. We are saying that the arbitrator took too narrow a focus in that she... Well, we're saying that the arbitrator erred as a matter of law, but we're not saying that she needed to make any determination as to relatedness or a single motive of Georgia Pacific. What we're saying is that in order to determine that Georgia Pacific's contribution cessation was not solely because of the 2004 sale of assets, what the arbitrator needed to do was to take a look at the transactions that Georgia Pacific effectuated, which resulted in that contribution cessation. And in fact, Georgia Pacific had multiple transactions that they affected, which resulted in that contribution cessation, specifically the 1994 through 1997 facility closures. And all she had to recognize is that these were, as a matter of law, sufficient to constitute causes of the contribution cessation. They were events of the exact type that result in withdrawal liability. They're directly traceable to the calculation of the withdrawal liability, and certainly the fact that Georgia Pacific had a partial withdrawal liability credit within this 10-year period shows that they had an effect upon the withdrawal liability calculated in this case. We're not talking about merely necessary conditions of the type this court stated in United States versus Dyer, which really are not directly traceable to the withdrawal liability calculation. Instead, what the arbitrator did is she applied a facts and circumstances analysis that she garnered from a PBGC opinion letter 92-1. Now, the first thing to note is that the arbitrator was under this mistaken belief that this interpretation of solely because that I've put forth today is limitless. And it is not limitless because if you have a contribution cessation that occurred before the 10-year period used to measure an employer's contributions for purposes of calculating withdrawal liability, that contribution history would never find its way into the withdrawal liability assessment, such that the only contribution history that would be included in the employer's withdrawal liability assessment would be contributions attributable to the operations sold in the exempt transaction, such that, in fact, the employer's withdrawal would have been solely because of the exempt transaction. So, in fact, it isn't limitless. But the employer applied, the arbitrator applied the facts and circumstances test from PBGC opinion letter 92-1, which states that in analyzing solely because, you should take a look at facts and circumstances surrounding the transactions, including factors such as the length of time between transactions, whether the multiple transactions were all exempt transactions exempt from the assessment of withdrawal liability, and whether the transactions were in fact related. The arbitrator also took a look at the comparative contribution histories, comparing the contribution histories of the closed operation, the operations closed in non-exempt transactions versus the operations closed in the exempt transactions, to determine which transactions made up the bulk of the contribution history in the withdrawal liability assessment. And ultimately, this facts and circumstances test sidesteps the fundamental question in this case, which is whether the non-exempt cessations played any role in causing Georgia Pacific's contribution cessation. And, in fact, the big problem with the opinion letter 92-1 is they never begin to interpret solely because, they never explain why a facts and circumstances test would be appropriate under a solely because analysis. And as this court said in the Sherwin-Williams case,
I have a question related to Judge Ripple's. I don't really understand what sense you give to solely because. In the normal physical world, nothing happens solely because of something else, right? Everything can be traced back to the Big Bang. But for the Big Bang, there wouldn't be, and so on. But for Georgia Pacific's existence, there wouldn't be withdrawal, right? So you can't mean, if I can find any other thing in the causal chain, then it's not solely because. Although part of your argument sounds like that. I can find something else in the causal chain that played a role. But, of course, you can always find something in the causal chain that plays a role. That leads to my question. What do you think solely because means, since it can't mean that there's some other thing in the causal chain?
Correct, Your Honor. Solely because requires a court court or arbitrator to distinguish between the necessary conditions and the actual causes. And so for solely because, there has to be only one cause leading to the contribution cessation. And what we're saying in this case is that there were other causes, and we're distinguishing causes from necessary conditions.
I'm asking what you understand solely because to mean, precisely because there will always be other causes. There is no conceivable transaction in which firm A sells a business to firm B where there will not be other causes, right? So one needs to understand by solely something other than the total lack of other causes, right? I could understand it to mean something like, if there had been no sale and things were otherwise the same, would there be withdrawal liability? If the answer is no and there is a sale, then we would say that it's within the statute. But you deny that it means that because that's the test the arbitrator applied. So I'm trying to figure out what legal meaning you give to this, given the impossibility of defining solely because to mean has no other cause.
Well, solely because Congress, in Section 1384, has stated that the contribution cessation of the employer must be solely because of the exempt transaction for them.
That. We're asking what that means.
And what we're saying that means is that the only relevance of contribution cessations within a withdrawal liability analysis means that you have to look at the time frame for examining whether a contribution cessation is, in fact, exempt from withdrawal liability. Congress has set forth 10 years.
I don't understand what that means either.
In other words,
do you have a functional, operational definition that real people can apply?
Yes, Your Honor.
What is that?
We have proposed that you look at the 10-year period relevant for calculating withdrawal liability, because only then can you determine.
Just give me your definition. Don't try to justify it. Just tell me exactly what you think the phrase means.
Solely because, within the concept of Section 1384, means that all of the causes for the employer's contribution cessation within that 10-year period, excuse me, it means that for an employer to be exempt from withdrawal liability under Section 1384, the sole cause of the employer's contribution cessation.
You cannot define sole cause by using the phrase sole cause.
Okay.
That's circular. Right. Give me a definition that does not contain the very phrase to be defined.
If solely because means that all of the employer's contribution cessations within the 10-year period relevant for determining and calculating withdrawal liability must have been through exempt transactions. If the employer, like Georgia Pacific in this case, engaged in other transactions.
Now, I thought at one point you might be saying that, but here's my problem with it. During the 10 years before, suppose Georgia Pacific had only one division, right? Didn't close any divisions, didn't do anything else, but during the 10 years before, it laid off one worker, right? And then, you know, it has 50 workers, lays off one, it now has 49. 10 years later, it sells the division to Blue Lynx. In your view, is the sale a sole cause or not?
Assuming the only instance was that one employee laid off, and then
your 10-year period, one employee is laid off.
Then the sale would be solely because.
Then I don't understand how your definition works, because within 10 years, they got rid of somebody and ceased making contributions to the plan.
Your Honor, I see I've entered my time for rebuttal. May I continue to answer the question?
Indeed.
The distinction is that the laying off of a single employee or even five employees does not in and of itself create a contribution cessation or a withdrawal liability event.
Well,
rather,
Berlinger, when we do look at what you've just suggested, aren't we looking at a fact and a circumstance?
Well, we don't believe so, because we believe it's a matter of law, because you're looking at, you're not analyzing the facts in terms of their relatedness. You're simply determining whether something meets the definition of a cause. And if there is a cause other than the contribution cessation, other than the exempt transaction that occurred within that 10-year period, then it's not solely because of the exempt transaction. The key we're trying
to give the opposite answer to my hypothetical. I mean, the alternatives to my answer would be to say something like, you should apply the step transaction doctrine common to tax lawyers. But, of course, there the arbitrator essentially tried to apply the step transaction doctrine and said these three particular closures, well, two closures and one sale, were not part of a single plan, so the step transaction doctrine wouldn't apply.
Well, what we're arguing is that there's a distinction between the simple laying off of employees or a few employees leaving a company. Those are not transactions which would result in or could result in withdrawal liability.
Off left, there's result in withdrawal.
But we know
the first closures did not result in withdrawal. you can imagine, instead of my one employee being laid off, it's 10 employees being laid off, and then 9 years later they sell the division. Right? So you can ask whether each of these things produces withdrawal liability. You could ask whether they are all part of a common plan. That's the step transaction question. But the arbitrator resolved that against you on the facts. And I don't know what else is left.
Your Honor, we're distinguishing between facility closures and terminations of contribution agreements, which are discrete events which could result in withdrawal liability. The fact that they didn't immediately trigger the withdrawal liability then does not mean that somehow they lose legal significance. I see I have only a minute left, if I may reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Casciari. Please just leave the microphone alone.
May it please the court. My name is Mark Casciari, and along with Molly Eastman, I represent Georgia Pacific, the petitioner in the arbitration below, and the appellee in this appeal. Your Honor, there are two stark competing positions of the parties in this appeal. Georgia Pacific contends, as a petitioner in arbitration, that it's 4204, also known as 29 U.S.C. 1384, compliant sale of assets, was the sole cause of its complete cessation of contributions. Central States, on the other hand, contended in arbitration that the 4204 sale of assets was not the sole cause, and that facility closings in 1993 and 1994 and in 1997 also caused the complete cessation of contributions. The arbitrator found no causal connection. And as Judge Easterbrook pointed out in passing, that finding was a finding of fact, that the arbitrator said that causation didn't exist as a matter of fact. Below, before the arbitrator, the parties engaged in full discovery. The parties submitted undisputed facts to the arbitrator. Central States, as well as Georgia Pacific, moved for summary judgment. All the facts are clear on the record. There is no dispute. And on the basis of the facts submitted to the arbitrator found that the prior facility closings had nothing whatsoever to do with the cessation of contributions when Georgia Pacific sold its facility, its distribution division, rather, to Blue Links. There was no causal connection. The standard of review, then, under the statute, the governing statute, is that Central States has to show that there is clear error in that finding of no causal connection. And in this appeal, in the proceedings before the district court and before the arbitrator, Central States offered no competing facts showing a causal connection between the prior facility closings and the cessation of contributions at the time of the 4204 sale. And that is not surprising when you look at the factual record. In 1993 and 1994, when the facility closings occurred, they were part of the pulp and paper division of Georgia Pacific. And the reason for those closings had nothing to do with what happened in 2004. It was a capital issue. It was an insurance liability issue. It didn't have anything to do with what happened in fact, 10 years later. In 1997, Georgia Pacific, with the help of a consulting firm, McKinsey, that had nothing to do with the 2004 sale to Blue Links, decided to restructure its distribution division and change the way it moved products. And as part of that, three facilities were closed. The arbitrator found, again, nothing to do with what happened in 2004.
This distribution division that we're talking about, what did it do?
Well, let me check my notes for just a moment. It was moving building products, for example, products.
Physically that, moving.
Yes. Yes.
Was it engaging in a sales effort as well?
My understanding is no. It was simply moving products and then selling them to the customer, to the to this, the customers of Georgia Pacific. But the record is not developed on that point. I don't think that's really critical. What is critical is that the distribution method that was used for that division changed fundamentally in 1997 and 1998 as a result of a restructuring.
The sale How did it change?
Well, they went from they went into a triad mode of distributing product with hub and spokes as opposed to just sending products out from one facility to another. They went to a hub and spoke system, and that's what the consultant said.
Did it change
said.
To whom they were selling the products? Were they selling them to a different level of wholesale distribution?
No, I don't think so. It was a change in the method of transporting the products to their customers, to their clients, wholesale purchasers. So what we have then is that in 1997, 1998, we have some facility closings. In 2000, Georgia Pacific acquired the Fort James Company and incurred substantial debt. And as a result of that incurring of the debt, needed eventually to come up with a way to get some cash. The debt, I think, was $6 billion that it incurred. Then germinated the idea of selling the distribution division to someone. That sale occurred in 2004. And at the time of that sale, Georgia Pacific intended to comply with Section 4204 and agreed to produce various safeguards that the statute requires for the exempt transaction to take place. For example, the purchaser puts up a bond. Georgia Pacific is secondarily liable if the purchaser ceases to make contributions within a five-year period after the sale. The transaction is consummated. In 2005, and this is at Georgia Pacific Appendix 48, Central States says, quote, the pension fund's board of trustees affirmed that the above-captioned transaction satisfied the requirements of ERISA 4204. One of those requirements is that the cessation of contributions attendant to the sale to Blue Links was solely caused by the sale itself. That was one of the requirements. And Central States said to Georgia Pacific in 2005, you complied with all of the requirements of 4204, provided you continue to apply, and there's no question that Georgia Pacific did so. So when you look at those facts, as the arbitrator found, there is no causal connection whatsoever between the prior closings and the sale of assets. It wasn't until 2007, over 2 years after Central States concluded that all of the requirements, including, of course, the solely because requirement of Section 4204, were satisfied, that an assessment should issue for $5.1 million against Georgia Pacific. And what happened in the intervening 2.5 years is anyone's guess, but what is clear is that Central States dramatically, in a 180-degree fashion, changed its position and assessed withdrawal liability, leading to this arbitration, district court proceeding, and now appeal. I think it's important to look at the big picture of what happened, which is what this court did in the Sherwin-Williams case when faced with a similar issue. From Central States' perspective, there was absolutely no drop in contribution levels following the sale of assets to Blue Links. A day before the sale to Blue Links, Georgia Pacific was contributing to the Central States Pension Fund at a certain level. A day after the sale to Blue Links, Blue Links was contributing to Central States Pension Fund at the same level. There was no change in contributions. In fact, if the requirements of Section 4204 ensure that the contributions are going to stay the same because the purchaser, as I mentioned, has to post a bond, and Georgia Pacific guarantees, as a matter of secondary liability, that the contributions stay the same. There also is no allegation in this case from the fund that this transaction was motivated by any desire to avoid withdrawal liability. There is a section of the statute that says that if you have a transaction that is motivated to evade or avoid withdrawal liability, the transaction has no effect. Central States makes no such allegation. So we have a purely independent, focused transaction causing the cessation of contributions, solely causing the cessation of contributions, that results in no contribution drop-off to the fund. The counsel for the fund brought up the PBGC opinion letter 92-1. This court in the O'Neill Brothers case said that the PBGC is entitled to deference. In 92-1, the PBGC concluded that a facts and circumstances test should go into the meaning of solely because. That makes sense because when you determine if there's a causal connection, you necessarily have to look at the facts and circumstances. It's a fact-based test. Is there a connection between prior events and later events? The PBGC opinion letter supports the position of the arbitrator. Your Honors, there are adverse consequences if this court accepts the position of Central States. It is interesting in the fund's reply brief at page 2, when they talk about deeming cause, they use the word deem. And that's because they're asking this court to get away from a factual analysis of causation. And that is why the fund is asking the court to interpret this as a matter of law, to create a legal gloss that makes the facts irrelevant. The court should not do so. Counsel argued that only exempt transactions in that 10-year period can be excluded from their definition of cause. That makes no sense. So if in that 10-year period there is an exempt transaction, it does not cause the later cessation of contributions. If that same transaction is not exempt, it causes the later cessation of contributions. That is a definition of cause that is fundamentally inconsistent, and that's why they use the word deemed for their definition of cause. To legally deem it to be cause, even though factually it makes no sense. As the arbitrator found, and Your Honor, one other point on that, if those prior transactions are non-exempt, they still may not trigger withdrawal liability. Withdrawal liability is not a function of what this fund says is withdrawal liability to capture what they call the contribution history. Withdrawal liability is a function of the statute. You can have cessations of contribution that don't create withdrawal liability, even if they are not exempt transactions. What they are doing is, by their definition, they are taking those circumstances and they're rendering them legally insignificant by saying if it's not exempt, it causes. If it's exempt, it doesn't cause. It makes no sense. As the arbitrator pointed out, moreover, because they condition causation on exempt transaction status, if the fund's position is accepted by this court, then it would be impossible for a 4204 transaction to know if it is a partial withdrawal, whether or not it can comply with the solely because test, because if there are other facilities that are still open at the time of the transaction, as the arbitrator pointed out, you will never know whether those later cessation events resulting from the shutdown of those later facilities are exempt or non-exempt. You won't know. In Sherwin-Williams, the court pointed out that efficiency, business efficiency, is important. That's an important value. It's an important trait of this particular law. And the reason I say that is because in 4204, the statute promotes business efficiency. It allows employers to rely on this exemption when all we're really talking about is a change of business operations and no cessation of contributions from the fund standpoint. If Central States is permitted to have its way in this court, then what is happening is employers will not be able to rely on 4204, will be discouraged from having asset sales, and it will affect efficiencies. The reason why the asset sale happens is because the purchaser feels it can run its business efficiently and continue contributions from a purchaser standpoint. From the seller standpoint, the seller is saying, I can't be efficient in this operation anymore. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass this on to someone who can be, and my business that results, that remains, will be more efficient. They are challenging that notion. Another way of looking at what is happening here, Your Honor, is that the fund is trying to grab the first 5 years of contribution history that the statute said does not go to the purchaser. But the way the statute works is there is much contribution history that simply is not part of an assessment. For example, the 5 years before the first 5 years, that may not ever make it into an assessment. It simply drops off because the contribution history period is limited to 10 years. What is happening here is that the fund is trying to grab that because the statute says that when you have no cessation of contributions from the fund standpoint, you don't get to grab it, and they're trying to get it. So for all of these reasons, there are consequences to their serious consequences to the way this statute is administered and to the viability of Section 4204 that this appeal presents. So, Your Honors, in sum, on the Georgia Pacific side of the ledger presented to this court, we have an arbitrator finding a fact that the sole cause for the cessation was a 4204 sale. We have that finding after full discovery. We have that finding without any evidence that the earlier transaction had any causal connection to the cessation that was part of the 4204 sale. We have no interruption in the contribution level to this fund. And we have full discovery before the arbitrator and cross motions for summary judgment and undisputed facts. We also have no finding or evidence that there was any intent to avoid withdrawal liability. To the contrary, Georgia Pacific was secondarily liable as a result of the Blue Link sale. We also have district court enforcement, and we have PBGC concurrence, and this court defers to the PBGC when, in this case, it makes sense, when the PBGC is hitting it right on the head with the definition of sole cause. And, Your Honors, we have, at the time of the event, we have Central States issuing its opinion that all of the requirements of Section 4204 were met 3 years, 2.5 years before it changed its mind and issued an assessment for $5.1 million. On the other side of the ledger, we have Central States with no serious challenge to the arbitrator's findings, with a plea that the court ignore.
I think we've been over this ground. There's just because your light is still on, there's no need to repeat yourself.
Your Honor, for all of these reasons, the court should affirm. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Berliner?
Your Honor, the reasons that the facility closures in this case, the 1994 through 97 facility closures, were causes of the withdrawal of the Georgia Pacific's contribution cessation is because they involve distinct facilities, distinct CBAs, as opposed to only being a few employees.
In your view, if the temporal sequence had been reversed?
If the temporal sequence had been reversed, then there would be no dispute that Georgia Pacific has withdrawal liability. Unfortunately, under the facts and circumstances.
What do you mean? Suppose what had happened, not simply reversing the temporal sequence, but instead of any closures, there were three sales. sale number one is the actual sale to Blue Lynx. Then 7 years later, another one of the divisions is sold to a second party. 3 years after that, the 10th year, the third division is sold to a third party. Georgia Pacific is now out of the fund, but the amount of money the fund gets is utterly unaffected because each of the sales is to an operating entity. It sounds like, on your view, you would say that Georgia Pacific retroactively has withdrawal liability for all three because there were three sales rather than one, and therefore none of the sales is the sole cause of Georgia Pacific no longer being a contributor to the fund.
Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. May I answer your question?
You can always answer a question. As long as the judges are talking, the lawyers can talk.
Your Honor, under your hypothetical, assuming all three sales were transactions exempt from withdrawal liability, presumably asset sales under Section 1384.
You're begging the question again. The question is whether they are exempt from liability. Sale number one, 7 years later, sale number two, 3 years later, sale number three. I don't understand why, on your view, you wouldn't be standing here saying none of the three sales was the sole cause of Georgia Pacific no longer being a contributor. It took three sales. And therefore, Georgia Pacific owes withdrawal liability for each of the three sales.
Assuming all the transactions meet the other requirements of Section 1384, we would agree that Georgia Pacific would not have withdrawal liability. The distinction
I don't understand how that's consistent with your legal definition of sole cause.
Because the distinction.
There were three causes. There were three sales.
Correct, Your Honor. But in your hypothetical, all three were transactions exempt from the assessment of withdrawal liability, whereas in this case with Georgia Pacific, only one of the events was a transaction exempt from withdrawal liability. Their facility closures were distinct events not exempt from withdrawal liability, and which simply did not lose legal significance merely because a certain number of years transpired following those closures. They occurred within the relevant 10-year period for calculating withdrawal liability, and they were not exempt from withdrawal liability. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.